Welcome to the McGuffin Band. I'm Alex, and with me doing his vocal warm-ups is James. Before we get started, check out our website, themcguffinband.com. Pretty easy to remember what we've talked about for the last three episodes. It's Seinfeld, Seinfeld, and Seinfeld. We've got some cool podcasts coming up the rest of this month. I mean, we didn't talk about this off podcast, but hopefully we're doing Bonnie and Clyde next week. I might write something about Anna Fleck and Ryan Bowden, which nobody will read, but that might exist. But yeah, check out the website, themcguffinband.com. Follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to us on iTunes. And
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, exactly. No, actually, we're done with that now.
Oh, right. No more yeah. Time sub.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah, theme song.
Welcome to the MacGuffin Men. And now, here are Alex and James.
That theme song is so much more melodic than what we're used to.
Sure was.
Yeah. But what are we talking about today, James?
Today we are talking about Sicario.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm saying that properly.
As a friend of mine whose name will not be said, to protect the innocent, pronounced it Cicero.
Nope.
And I quickly corrected him that is not correct.
I'm going with Sicario.
Yeah, exactly. His defense. Yes, it's definitely Sicario. His defense was, he had never heard the word said.
You know? Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not going to roll the R, but I think I'm getting close enough
exactly.
Get away with it. Yeah. This is one of your choices.
It was.
Do you want to say why?
I mean, it's dope as shit. I really enjoy it. It's a really good action movie. You still haven't seen Prisoners, right?
Correct.
I knew you were a Denis Villeneuve fan in waiting. Well, I suppose I should ask, did you like Sicario?
I didn't know he directed Waiting. yeah, I did like it. I think I liked it less than you do, but I definitely liked it.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was just about to kind of leap to greatness constantly. And there's definitely times of a very well-made movie in here. I just don't think it maintains it.
Yeah. Oh, I would agree with that. But that being said, like Prisoners was a really, really enjoyable, like, cop movie made with a sort of artfulness that just doesn't exist in that type of movie very frequently. Sicario is an action movie that is made very artfully and very masterfully, I would say, for the most part. And I love it when really smart, thoughtful people make action movies. And I know you do too, so I figured let's talk about it. Because it really does not happen very frequently.
No, and I mean, the highs of this movie are very high, and I think that's what you mean by it's, you know, artful people crafting something very well. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think we're going to do everything your boy Roger Deakins touches.
No, we don't. We don't do everything he does.
Okay. Yeah. What did you like about this the most, I guess?
What did I like about this? I love the setup of Benicio's character, Alejandro, like so much. The buildup of like, who is this guy? Who is this guy? Who is this guy? When is he going to do something? And then it continues to be a build. Like he does some on the... when they're crossing back into the across the border, that's where you sort of see his first real moment of him being in action and having to actually physically act in any way.
Yeah.
You know, and up to then it's just, you know, him in a suit checking his phone, and even just the way he's like checking his phone in that briefing, like he immediately sits down and has no interest in being involved in this meeting at all.
This very high level meeting about people who are soon to die.
Yeah, exactly. And and even just like the way he crossed his legs was so like nonchalant. Like, I don't know. There was something particularly Benicioian about that I really enjoyed. But it, just in general, the build up to his character and the fact that the build keeps happening until what is more or less the climax of this movie, of him murdering the family of cartel leader. I think that that progression I really, really enjoyed. And just in general, found the way that his character was portrayed to be very, very interesting. And you know, I'm a big Benicio fan. So
yes, you are. Yeah, no, a few things about that. I mean, we've seen, you know, these characters before, you know, these mysterious, you know, tall, dark men, with a story in their past.
He's the guy in that Simpsons episode, that Yakuza member, just standing still, just waiting to do something.
Something cool.
Marge just pulling Homer inside.
Yeah. And you know, to your point, it's sometimes we see that for the first third of the movie, and then the second act is kind of the whole reveal, and then the third act we kind of close it down, and it's about, you know, 10, 15 minutes left in this movie when we really kind of get a lot of grasp about who he is and how he operates and, you know, what drives him. So, yeah, I think that's very interesting to do that as late as they did.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, in general, the movie structurally is kind of bizarre. Like, there's no, it doesn't feel like the sort of typical three-act movie, partially because, you know, even though the title Sicario is clearly more applicable to Benicio's character than Emily Blunt's, we're kind of led to believe, I mean, she gets top billing, that Emily Blunt is the lead character in this film. And she kind of isn't by the end. Like, they kind of end up being equal leads, I would say, by the end of it. But it's very much, I don't know, I found something about the way that the movie transitioned from Kate to Alejandro really, really fascinating and very, very uncommon, especially what we said earlier about an artful action movie. The action movie is a genre where you don't typically get breaks from that three-act structure, you know, and I just enjoyed that a lot. Yeah,
no, of all the genres, this would be kind of near the end is, you know, of the spectrum for what I assume would be the place where you can kind of get away with those kinds of things, just because they come with a bigger price tag, and it's such a genre in the sense of, you know, a genre movie, that there are these conventions that are, for the most part, stuck to pretty generally. Well, yeah, I mean, to me, the thing about this transition from Kate to Alejandro, and, you know, I will say that I'm someone who kind of loves that stuff, you know, Scream, putting Drew Barrymore on the poster and then getting her out of there in the first 10 minutes. You know, it's done in Psycho as well, a transition from our main character. I think that's really good. As you said, it is a break from conventions, and it's one that I like a lot just because it can be such a curveball. Well, I think it's what's remarkable about it in this one is that it makes so much sense thematically, because I think, you know, so much about this movie is just being part of something way bigger than you, or only really having, you know, control or knowledge of a small part of a very big situation. And Kate is, you know, I don't have to explain, kind of used in this movie, I think. It's, you know, we learn maybe around halfway through that the reason she's involved at all is just because a domestic agency needs to be involved in any of these things outside of American soil. And, you know, it's just her role as, you know, being a domestic agent like that is what kind of makes so much of this movie that takes place in Mexico possible for these federal agents. And I mean, we see so many things like that in this movie, you know, just being a small part of something bigger. I think it's made quite clear when the discussion that Reggie and Kate are, you know, they're sitting in that room, but they've got their back to a glass room of everyone talking about them. You know what I mean? Like, you know, talk about being left out. It's about what they've done. It's about what they're going to be doing in the future. You know, this whole discussion that's happening in this room, and they can't even look at it, let alone hear it. And, you know, she kind of gets called in, and, you know, this happens over and over in this movie, but there's no formal introductions for Kate. You know, there's just, it's this machine. She kind of puts her foot in. People might look at her, but no one, you know, really notices her, greets her, says hi to her for the most part. It's just this big machine that she's kind of an occasional cog of, you know, not even frequently. It just kind of put in the machine whenever they need someone. And I think with a lead character like that, I think that she is the protagonist, I'd have to say, just kind of based on screen time alone and the knowledge we have for her and the way that it's shot, I think we're really supposed to care about her the most and relate to her the most.
Oh, we're definitely supposed to relate to her, though. Yeah. I mean, there is a small number of people that probably relate more to Benicio, but I do not want to be in the movie theater with them.
That's true. Yeah, and I think just the way that she is, you know, just part of this much bigger operation that she isn't even told her role in often, or who she should report to, or what the objectives of missions is that she's a part of and risking her life to be a part of are.
Yeah.
I just think that lines up so well with the way that this is structured, in that we care about her. We care about her until, you know, we don't care about her anymore, or at least it becomes less easy to care about her just because she's not as present. And we've had this very, you know, magnetic figure, which I think Benicio Alejandro definitely falls in that category. Mm-hmm. Just who's had this gravity about him for so long and so little detail, that by the time we get to that final act, we finally get to know a bit more about him and, you know, some very interesting sequences. We're so stuck on that. It just becomes, you know, the issue, the person, the focus of this movie that our attention's on after, you know, two thirds with Kate.
Yeah. And that he, like, the movie literally leaves Kate behind for a while at the end, you know? And, yep. And I think there's the whole movie I find is about differing paths, you know, and choosing different paths. And you see it visualized a bunch of times when they're flying into Juarez on the helicopters. You see these two roads, one going into Juarez and one that's a much more like clean paved road going, I don't know where, cause we don't follow it. And then when they're on the ground and driving into Juarez, the highway, the most obvious path is closed off, and they take the streets under. And Kate and Alejandro are very differing paths, you know? And, towards the end of the movie, they split off from the rest of the group, you know, and they go, there's literally a fork in the tunnel that they well, not a literal fork. There's no utensils, as far as I know.
But, I'll allow this, though.
Okay, yeah, but you know what I mean.
As a strict user of the word literally, I still think this one works.
Yeah, exactly. And but they split off from everybody else. They choose a different path. And I think that whole Kate and Alejandro, I guess relationship is interesting because they do represent these differing paths and how they do come closer together by the end. And I just thought the theme of differing paths throughout the movie I found really interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, just speaking about what characters you're following and caring about, it's called Sicario. And, you know, they are very upfront about the fact that that means hitman in Mexico. And, you know, watching this movie, I was thinking about halfway through that I expected a lot more Benicio del Toro in this movie. Mm. Just kind of what I gathered from the marketing is that he's the hitman. The movie's called essentially Hitman. Mm-hmm. We are going to see a lot of him. And as we've discussed, really until the last third, you don't see a ton of him. Yeah.
It makes the movie so much better, though.
Well, I saw that they were discussing the director and Taylor Sheridan, the writer, and Benicio saying that they cut about 90% of his dialogue and his backstory just to make his character more enigmatic and more interesting. I'm guessing you think that was for the best?
Smart decision. Even smarter decision. I was listening to Roger Deakins talk to your favorite cinematographer, Dick Pope, about the movie. And he said that they actually shot an intro for Alejandro. That's an action scene. And they cut it out, which I can only imagine would have made the movie worse if that scene exists, despite the fact that it would have probably been a really well-made action sequence given the rest of them in the movie. I think that was unquestionably the smart decision to cut that sequence, because I think it's so interesting that we have no real establishing for Alejandro. He's just a guy that ends up being there. And like the closest thing we have to establishing his character is like he has trouble sleeping, you know, like,
yeah. Yeah. So. Yeah. No, I mean, talk about an unconventional way to make an action movie. We you know, we get our action scene right up front. Mm-hmm. We start establishing our main character like that right away. Yeah. The fact that they very consciously had all that and turned it down, I think, is very interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, there are very defined like character intros for Josh Brolin's character and Emily Blunt's character, whereas Alejandro is just, he just is standing there next to the plane when Kate pulls up. And it's kind of, it, I think it makes it so much better that, because yeah, in most movies like this, where it's sort of like a three-hander, you would get character one intro, character two intro, character three intro, and then we see them finally come together. But yeah, and I think it helps this movie that that does not happen in Alejandro's case.
Yeah, and I mean, to that point, our introduction to Alejandro is he's off in the distance, his back's turned. You're not even sure if it's Benicio. Yeah. Like, we just, he's outside of the plane. We're following, you know, the two characters that we know most about, and he's kind of off in the distance. And his presence is addressed and everything, but we really don't get, an introduction, a formal introduction, certainly not. But even kind of a cinematic introduction doesn't take place.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've mentioned Mr. Deakins.
I have. Freaky Deakins Need Love Too.
Director of photography, cinematography.
Director of photography or cinematographer, whatever you prefer to call him.
Deektography.
Yeah. Yeah. When he dies, they'll rename the profession.
I'm guessing you enjoyed his work here.
Yeah, I did. And it's so funny. Like, because I thought he also shot Prisoners, which I thought was a spectacularly well done movie. I referred to it, like, cinematography wise, I referred to it as David Fincher light, which is always a way higher compliment than it sounds like, just because of the esteem in which I hold David Fincher. Yeah, he does really good work. And I remember reading about this movie and how he, I think it was in an interview with The Playlist, where he's just talking about it a little bit briefly. He's like, oh yeah, we just, you know, we shot it pretty starkly. We used all natural light not all natural light, but, you know, tried to shoot in the environments without lighting them and stuff like that. I'm like, I was kind of like disappointed because I love Roger Deakins' lighting. And then there's that shot of them walking into the tunnel in Magic Hour, and it's just the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your life. And it's just so great. But yeah, all throughout the movie, I mean, there's great examples of just a beautiful cinematography. And even in those starker, even in the under the sun of Arizona, he still manages to make everything look better than anybody can, you know?
Yeah, they really let you soak in that moment as they're going in the tunnel, eh?
I know, I love that so much. And that not only do we get to watch every one of those I don't even know what to call them.
operatives.
Okay, there we go. They walk down the hill and we see them all go off screen, and then it holds for like another 5 seconds. And I love that filmmaking. That's like, I know what I have here, and I know you're okay with this, even though it's just 5 seconds of sky, you know. I know this is the best looking sky you're going to see in like 2 years. You know?
Yeah. 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 He really likes his reflective surfaces.
Yeah. Yeah. How so?
I don't know, just there's a lot of, we got the kind of that aerial, not even aerial, but, you know, from the top of the room that shot downward of the bathroom mirror and sink.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of just the beginnings of scenes shot, you know, reflecting in window glass, mm-hmm. or glass, mm-hmm. somewhere.
Yep.
And I know Deakins is really showy. And I mean, we talked about that, you know, that Magic Hour scene there, yeah. of just kind of letting it go on for longer than... you know, a lot of people would. I thought a lot of those kind of reflective surface shots were a little showy in a bad way. Like, I thought they did very little. They didn't even look. I mean, I just didn't think the what was being shot was that pleasing. And I think, mm-hmm. just to have those shots go on for as long as they did sometimes really kind of, what? To me, were just drawing attention to something I didn't think was that nice.
Okay, well, the only shot I can think of that you're talking about that I can actually picture is when Emily Blunt, after she showers after the opening raid, and she's looking at herself in the mirror, which is, as Jason Mantzoukas likes to say frequently, something that only happens in movies. And it's like, it's on his list of things that just never happen in real life, but seem to happen in every other movie.
Yeah.
But the thing I liked about that shot was that, you know, the mirror had fogged up, but like only covering her face, which I thought was a nice little twist on a shot that is in so many different movies.
Yeah.
And I really did enjoy that, because that is a shot that typically annoys me in movies. But yeah, I'm curious to, I can also picture a shot from outside of the car pointing in on Benicio, where it's reflecting on the car. But I like that shot.
Yeah, there's the one of you remember the scene where Diaz is receiving the phone call about the bank and his kids are playing in the pool outside.
Mm-hmm.
The you know establishing shot of that is just this slow, I'm guessing, dolly shot of the windows of his condo or house, whatever it is. It's kind of as the phone's ringing and stuff like that. It just didn't look pleasing to me, and it just kind of kept going. And I know he does so many big, stylish things that work out so well. And this mm-hmm. one just seemed to be him kind of taking his time on something that I just felt wasn't that pleasing. And I know it doesn't all have to be pleasing. And there's a lot of things in this movie that are unpleasing mm-hmm. and meant to discomfort you. And this is a very, very tense movie. And it, you know, manages to create tension very well. But there are scenes like that that I didn't think that that was the purpose of these shots, and to make you kind of uncomfortable and not have something super aesthetically pleasing. It just seemed out of place and unnecessary. And then there are things that did look so good. And, you know, those shots you're kind of describing of the SUVs going through the borders and all of that stuff in Juarez is just stunning. I mean, it's not that none of these big ideas, you know, pan out really well, because I think several of them do. I just thought that there was a bit much at times when I didn't see thematically or visually what the purpose would be.
Okay.
You're cool with that?
I mean, I'll say this isn't like Roger Deakins' finest hour, but Roger Deakins' worst hour is better than most. But yeah. And I don't think you would disagree with that. But I guess just none of the shots that you're mentioning to me jumped out to me in any way, except for that mirror shot, right. Either good or bad. So they certainly didn't bother me, and they weren't the shots I was excited about either. You know?
Okay. How about that shot of when they're going, it's shot from kind of in the tunnel and they're taking that hill downward, and I guess it's Josh Brolin pulls that knife.
Mm-hmm.
And it's silhouetted, and he walks towards the camera, and the knife gets kind of bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
Do you remember? You remember the shot I'm describing?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right?
Of course. I assumed that was Alejandro. Wouldn't it have been?
Oh yeah, that's right. Yes, yes, yes. See, and that's another one too. I liked it initially, and I liked the outline. It just kind of, I just thought it dragged. It just became kind of what was a cool little thing to see the outline of the knife so clearly, just stretched out. And you know, I like those moments that we talked about before where they kind of let you take in that magic hour shot and things like that. But mm-hmm. it just seemed like too much, like a little showy in a way that a shorter shot kind of achieves this idea. And, you know, you can kind of take in the composition for what it is. And then it looked less and less attractive as you got closer and closer, and it became really stark, and I didn't like it.
Okay. Well, if we're talking about cinematography ideas that we don't like, I hated the night vision goggles, hated them so much.
Yeah. And that was another
care for that.
Yeah. That was stark too. And, all together. Did you think they shouldn't have included like a single shot of it? Or do you think they just used it too often?
I in general, like, it's just sort of a general recoil for me. When movies try to be video games.
Felt very video gamey.
And that's something that like is very specific, like I think, to the modern action movie, in that it's just something that has, it's just a progression in the genre that we're not going to turn back from. It's just a progression I don't like, where it's become so much more important to put you in the shoes of the character, you know, and that's a really good way to do that. I'm just not crazy about it, and it will always make me recoil in the same way that GoPro shots will always make me recoil. You know, it just seems like the easiest way to get us more involved in the action, instead of staging something and shooting it like you're a movie, as opposed to like I'm supposed to be seeing it out of my eyes, you know. And that's not to say like all POV shots are terrible, but it's like it's the combination of action movie POV and a sort of technologically gimmicky shot.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
What about, in kind of speaking on the black and white, because they do, it seems they had a kind of a thermal camera, and then they also had what looked like a straight film negative too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those were two different things, right?
Yeah, maybe though, because I think, well, I don't know. I don't remember well enough. I was too busy rolling my eyes.
Okay. Yeah, well, I got a big eye roll out of when they do go to that bank. You know, they find that woman who's depositing $9,000 a day. And it's a scene that we see a lot in action movies, especially ones that involve banks, is the security camera shot.
Yeah.
And that didn't bug me. But did you notice kind of right before that, there was still a black and white shot of outside that didn't look... It looked like this kind of halfway between the way that they had been filming it and the black and white security cam footage.
No, I didn't notice that.
It was really jarring to me and very unpleasant. Yeah. And there's just a man and woman walking on the street in black and white. And then we cut to a different camera angle with different video quality. It was really weird and unpleasant.
Okay. Anyway. I will say in regards to that sequence where they use the surveillance camera footage. I think there are a lot of times in this movie where the filmmakers do something that is in so many action movies or so many movies in general, like that the mirror scene, and they do it just slightly differently, and I really like it. And I think that the shot, as far as the surveillance cameras go, that really represents that, is when we don't see like this sort of wall of surveillance cameras in full and this master wide, like we would typically, or maybe we get, you know, a split screen of nine screens of surveillance footage. You know, we get this like panning shot across them, panning and tilting down a little bit. And it's just kind of like, it's just a nice camera move that shows us all of these things, but also keeps us, there's just something more artful about it. And it just is much more pleasing than, what I think is exactly what you're talking about, where they just cut to surveillance footage, which is much more jarring, you know, especially when the images preceding it are typically pretty beautiful. You
know? Yeah, and I think that is kind of another action thing where, you know, maybe you have a huge budget now and you've got all this stuff and you want to show it all off in one shot to say, you know, look, this is really the big time kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think showing it in that way still gets the breadth of how much stuff you have going on, but is shot differently and a bit more pleasing.
Yeah, and the last one that I can remember off the top of my head is when they're driving into Juarez, but there's the shot of the shot begins on the road and does the tilt up. And in every other movie, the shot like there are so many movies where the shot exists to show the convoy. You know, we tilt up from the road to see this convoy of cars. And the cars are centered. In this shot, the curb to the right of the cars is centered, and it's just like you're following this line, and it's just so much more pleasing, because like as the shot is happening, you're like, oh, I know there's gonna be an Escalade in the middle of the frame in a second, and it's like, oh, it's to the left, I like that, you know. And it's just like, it's those little things that I think really really sort of set Villeneuve apart from a lot of genre filmmakers, and kind of make me like him quite a bit. And I think it also speaks to what you were talking about with saying how Kate is such a small part of this big world, and how, you know, she knows so little and all that stuff. Like, there's just this attention to detail that runs throughout the movie that I think ties into that, where like maybe you remember the shot of when the first raid is starting, we get a shot from inside the house of sort of dust just floating in the air in the sun. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yep. There's another one in front of dust flying in front of the projector in one of the briefings.
Yep.
And Kate's blinds in the final scene, where it's just like these details exist in this world. Well,
everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like, these are the little things in this giant world. And Kate is this little person in this giant world. That everybody's a little person in this giant world. Even Alejandro is pretty little, all things considered. And that type of stuff really runs through. And I saw this with Travis yesterday, and he mentioned how he really enjoyed the sound. And like, I was thinking the same thing. Like, when Kate is in her kitchen, the kitchen has the hum of a kitchen. And, like, it's just the fridge hum. It's the fridge, you know? Yeah. And, you know, when you're getting a glass of water later, you can just hear that hum, you know? And I had been thinking the same thing, because he's right. And that's something that doesn't exist in a lot of movies. But when Alejandro and Kate are sitting across the table from each other in silence, there's no music. There's the hum of the kitchen because they're in the kitchen. But it's also kind of adds something to the scene. Like, it adds an element of tension because it takes you closer to that kitchen.
Yeah, no, I get that. And
oh fuck, I just remembered. You really liked Enemy, right?
Yeah, I liked Enemy.
Yeah,
a lot.
Denis Villeneuve.
I know, I totally
forgot you had seen that.
Yeah, I was a big Enemy fan.
Yeah, Enemy's good.
Yeah, and you're the only one I was ever able to talk to. So
a weird number of people have seen that movie. When I saw Sicario at TIFF, the person next to me had seen it too. She didn't like it, but
was it your twin?
It was. No, but it was a spider.
Right. Yeah. Spoilers.
Spiders are in the first scene of the movie.
Anyway, back to Sicario. Mm-hmm. You talked about, you know, just to your last point, one that you brought up earlier, but that, you know, the night vision goggles, the this is you being part of a video game, this is you really in the character's shoes. A little bit after that, we are, you know, still in the tunnels. We have this big shootout and lots of people shooting and other people shooting back. And we really see barely even half of that fight. You know what I mean? We don't see the presumably Mexicans being gunned down. We see kind of the sides and the back of our American operatives. That seems really anti-action movie, too. I mean, this is leading up to be what it, you know, what seemed like it was going to be our biggest action sequence. And we don't see the blood. We don't see the people being shot. We don't see them falling over and screaming. That's kind of antithetical to the super, you know, video gamey kind of POV shots.
Yeah, no, I agree entirely. And I think that, yeah, the movie was like, no, we're following Alejandro now. This doesn't really matter. You know, like this is happening to get Alejandro through the tunnel. It's a means to an end, so we're going to show you the end, you know, like we don't care so much about the means.
But even just watching Reggie and Kate in that sequence, you know, they're not really shooting people. We are seeing people shooting, but we're just not seeing it in the standard way of seeing where they're shooting and then seeing those people go down.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that sort of speaks to another thing that I really like about the movie, in that it's kind of like, it's got a lot of elements of a horror movie to it. And, I love that, you know, like I think that really helps to further set it apart.
Like what elements do you mean?
There's just like this, it's never really, it's never so much about the shooting as it is the lead up to the shooting or the, like, what's going to happen next, you know, like there's so much. And yeah, these are suspenseful moments that are very much a part of an action movie, but there's just this sort of pervasive dread throughout the movie that I think is more horror than action movie. And you know, we've got the first scene or the first raid ending with people discovering corpses in the walls of this house, you know, and I think that really establishes this, like, this just horrifying world, you know.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
And the way that Benicio is set up, like, I think is kind of like a somebody to be feared. Like, you don't quite know when he's going to do something or what he's going to do, but he's going to do something. And you hope you're out of the way when that happens, you know? And we see that torture-ish scene where we cut away before any real torture happens. But it's very much set up like, oh, this is a wolf to be feared, you know?
Yeah. What about that shot of the drain on the floor?
I like it. I think that's a good way to get out of the scene.
Yeah. Okay.
I didn't really care to see torture. And I think actually, because I mentioned I shot this at the TIFF premiere of it. I think it was just the North American premiere. But the Denis Villeneuve and maybe Roger Deakins were talking about it in the Q&A, and they said, yeah, we didn't really feel like showing torture. We show enough horrible things in this movie. And it was kind of like, we'll leave it to your imagination. Because somebody asked, I think the question was, what happens to that guy?
Yeah.
And they're just like, why answer it? You know, like, how does that help the movie?
Yeah, and I think what contributes largely to that horror vibe is the music as well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
This is not action movie music. Very dreadful, atmospheric, weird music.
Yeah.
Did you like the?
Did I like the music? Yes, definitely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Sometimes it was jarring at times, but I think it did a very good job of kind of filling out that horror vibe in a way without having to, this movie is gruesome at times, but without having to lean on like torture porn and those things like that.
I totally forgot the most horror-y scene of all, the John Barenthal scene, when Kate goes home from the bar with this guy, and they're just making out, and then it turns into a horror movie.
Yes, absolutely.
And like that, and in a way that's so like immediately jarring and terrifying, and really well staged. And like the moment it happens, there's a cut where, we've been seeing Kate and John Barenthal, I don't remember his character's name, lit like people are in living rooms, just this very naturalistic lighting. And then Kate had stood up, gone to her kitchen, and to try and get her gun. And we get this cut as the cowboy, I suppose, figures out what's going on. And they're suddenly just in silhouette. And because they're now lit by the lamp on Kate's kitchen table. And I think it's this really wonderful moment of where the scene totally changes, where they both clue in to what's happening. And it's where it becomes a really horror-ish scene, and just the all the times Alejandro is just hiding in the shadows throughout the movie.
Yes, of which there are many.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I wasn't nuts about the elastic band reveal, but the scene that it provided was good.
Yeah, exactly. The reveal is, it's just a bit sloppy on his part, but yes, the scene is worth it's worth the sloppiness. Yeah,
and I mean, he's in on that. Like, he should know that she should know about the elastics. It's all sloppy. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he never seems like the most intelligent guy. He's got that yokel voice. He's from Arizona.
True. Ooh, upsetting all our listeners.
Yeah, all our listeners in Arizona.
Go Cardinals. what did you think of Silvio's subplot? We kind of get him sprinkled in before he's the main factor in our story.
I had a bit of an argument with this about this with Dawson, who also saw the movie. He didn't like it. And he didn't like it in a way that I suspect you didn't like it.
Hey, I like The Wire.
Dawson likes The Wire.
Oh, okay, then never mind.
I don't think he's ever seen season 5. I've been bugging him about that, but he definitely likes The Wire.
Shout out to all our Baltimore fans.
Yeah, they're not from fucking Arizona.
Dawson didn't like
these. Yeah, Dawson didn't like Silvio, and I liked them, and I was not surprised to learn that there were apparently more scenes with other characters like that, and they cut it down for pacing.
Getting real trafficy on us.
Well, this movie's already pretty trafficy.
Yeah, I know.
Especially the ending is very trafficy, a little less hopeful, but still very trafficy. That they just cut it down for pacing. And I like the Silvio scenes. I kind of just like the whole tie-in with there are other people affected other than Americans. I think it was, you kind of had to do all or nothing to make it really worth your while. I think a character that would have been really nice to have that element to is at the end of the border crossing scene after the action sequence is essentially over. And the camera like pans up from the dead bodies to these people in the car that are opening the doors to see this dead body. I think I strongly suspect one of the people in those cars was one of the people that was set up.
Yeah.
Because just the way the camera sort of shifts to them and the way they cut away quickly, kind of like, no, whoops, you're not supposed to see this. But I think it would have been much stronger if there were like three people that they set up, because I like the way it ties in. And I kind of think it would have helped the movie if there was two more people like that. Yeah.
Right. And then we're probably at 2.5 hours, maybe.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like, one of the pluses of this movie is that it is a very tight movie.
And could be much bigger, as you said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And feels bigger than it is. Like, when you think about it, it's about this giant subject, but like, of what we see, it's not this giant movie,
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
Yeah.
So you said it's very trafficy. I've seen some comparisons to Zero Dark Thirty. What do you think?
Well, I see that. Yeah, I haven't thought about it, but I definitely see it.
Yeah, I mean, we have our late, you know, our third act, you know, night vision goggle raid. Yeah. I mean, a female lead, which shouldn't be as exceptional as it is, but that is the case. Yeah. Anything else? Not a lot of, you know, Sharpie on window.
Yeah, well, I would say Sicario is a better movie than Zero Dark Thirty.
For that reason.
Yeah, and it's not to say that I didn't like Zero Dark Thirty, but I certainly like Sicario more.
Yeah.
And Sicario had one additional Benicio that Zero Dark Thirty did not have.
So that helps.
Yeah, but Zero Dark Thirty did have a little bit of Kyle Chandler, which goes a long way in my books.
Yeah, and not that I think I disliked Jessica Chastain more than the average person in that. Not that I hated her, but I didn't see all the hype that some people did. I thought Emily Blunt was very good in this movie.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
You didn't think so?
No, I liked her. I certainly. I mean, it's kind of like this. This she's got such a difficult role to play, in that she's the one that has to blend in. You know, like, well, I mean. Like, Benicio just has this natural charisma that you just cannot compete with, you know? And then Roland's playing this over-the-top type of character. You know? Who, yeah, we somehow have went 40 minutes without discussing.
I was trying to see how long I could do it.
You made it 40 minutes. Or actually, I suppose you haven't technically discussed him yet. So,
discussed who?
Yeah, exactly. But Kate is dealing with a very... Emily Blunt is dealing with a very difficult... role and the position to play in this movie, and I think she does well, and I think the fact that she never stood out to me is probably a compliment. Yeah.
Right. So here's a Kate question. I mentioned earlier, and I mean this kind of seems to be the way the movie paints it most clearly. Black Mirror cast member, what up? Go Black Mirror. Yeah.
I too support it. It's just not necessarily that episode.
Yeah, true. What was I going to say about Kate?
I don't know.
Oh, yes, right. You know, it kind of seems set up that, and this is the reveal that Reggie Wayne, really his name in this movie.
Oh, really?
Kate's partner is Reggie Wayne.
That's
funny. You know, he's the one who kind of realizes at the same time he's being told that they're only on this to have a domestic agency, so they're able to do this outside their jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So we kind of get this idea that Kate's just there, you know, to be used, to get that signature that she very reluctantly gives up at the end of the movie to say everything was by the book. Do you think that's what it is? Do you think that they kind of wanted to rope her in just for that signature? Or do you think that they kind of had her on to try to really have her join the team or kind of turn her? Because she seems very idealistic where... most of the people who work above her that she ends up working with or side by side for the last two thirds of this movie kind of don't seem as idealistic. They've kind of given in. I mean, just the very plot of what they're doing is, you know, let's have the whole drug war be under our control instead of other people fighting over it. And that creates more order, which I understand their argument, but that doesn't seem like something Kate would be on board with, especially at the beginning of this film. Do you think that there is an attempt by them to turn her, or do you think it's really just the signature they want?
I think they are bringing her along for the signature, and if she turns along the way, that's great, but they don't have any great hopes of that happening, I don't think.
Yeah, because I just mean the way that Matt, Josh Brolin, kind of asks about her and seems to show an interest in her kind of beyond just that signature, and I don't mean that in a romantic sense, but you know, asking about if she has family and things like that. I didn't know if that was kind of a real attempt to have her on in an important way.
Well, I think in that, he just, like, I think that's mostly, he wants to, like, I think, because he understands there's a good chance she's going to die.
And he just wants to feel less guilty?
I think that's what that line of questioning is.
There's a lot of questions and talk about family in this movie.
Is there?
Yes.
Well, yeah, I suppose.
Absolutely, there
yeah.
is.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it, because he suspects that she will die, and he wants to make sure that he's not ruining other lives other than hers.
Okay.
And that her deciding to be a part of the task force is a decision that affects her, you know, as opposed to her family as well.
Right.
Okay. Since she knows so little going in.
Yeah. Oh, at that point.
And knows so little getting out as yeah, well.
She knows more, but yeah. Not much more. Do you think, I mean, we talked about the way that this movie breaks from a lot of action conventions. Do you think it suffers at all from the best sequence coming as early as it does? And maybe you disagree, but I think it's definitely the border crossing shootout.
Mm-hmm. I think the best action sequence is that, yes. But I really love the way that we kind of leave the tunnel action sequence and it just turns into Benicio on the warpath at the end. And like removed from the fact that it's Benicio and again, big Benicio fan over here. Benicio super fan number 99. I just sort of like the way that that sequence goes. And
he flips it. Flips it for real.
No, exactly. And I like that sequence so much. And there are stages of that sequence. You know, he has to get Silvio. He has to go track down, I forget the guy's name, but the guy that works for the cartel.
Diaz. And then,
Diaz?
Yep.
Okay. And then he has to, kill Silvio, capture Diaz, go into cartel leader's house with Diaz, then kill Diaz, kill the other guys, and then sit down with the family and have his little chat, and then murder a family. Like, I like that whole sequence. I like the buildup, and it really is sort of this. It really ties into the horror elements of the movie that I like so much, and it's, you know, still more of an action movie, but just the way that it is shot and edited and just in general directed is very horror-esque.
Yes, I would fully agree with that.
Yeah. And and the fact that Benicio leaves everybody behind is like just something I did not see coming, you know?
Yeah.
And I like it so much. And it's when we get to see Alejandro go full Alejandro, you know? It's when we finally see, promise is a bad word to use, but the promise of Alejandro, like, coming through, you know?
Yeah, that sounds much too optimistic, but I know you're kidding.
Yeah.
Right on.
He's the Adrian Peterson of murdering.
Yeah. So you're pumped for Sicario too?
That's never going to happen.
No, I know.
Yeah. I'm glad we're on the same page with that.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I mean, we should talk about the last scene, right?
Sure, absolutely. That gave me, I mean, there are definitely a few things in this movie, not just Josh Brolin's presence, that also gave me the No Country for Old Men vibe.
Mm. Or the presence of Benicio giving you a Usual Suspects vibe.
Yeah. No, but just that very end did remind me of of No Country for Old Men as well. Mm. And I know you're a big fan of how that movie ended, so.
Well, yeah, I mean.
What's your take on this one?
On this one, I find the scene, I'm talking specifically about the scene with Kate and Alejandro.
Yeah.
You know, the soccer scene follows it and closes the movie. Hate the title card at the end of the movie, but
Speaking of things that I might hate, that kid didn't single tear during that soccer game, right?
Oh, I don't know. I didn't notice it.
Okay.
I hope not.
No, I'm 80%
sure. We might have to redo this podcast if he did.
I think it was just a bit of light on his nose. I honestly wanted to buy another ticket just for that. Yeah. Like, I wanted to make sure. I don't think these people seem too smart for that, though.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. I would bet a lot of money.
Okay. Anyway, so Alejandro and Kate back at her.
Yeah, exactly. And
he needs the signature.
Yeah, and one, I like the way that they're both lit. Like, we can see Kate, and Alejandro is just full on Shadow Man at this point. You know?
Yeah.
Like that. I like how clear Alejandro is. It's like, no, you're signing this. You know, like, and it's just like, even though this is a person that he has shown, you know, mild concern for throughout, and has explained much more to her in comparison to Matt, Matt's character, who just like goes out of his way to not explain things to her.
Yeah. And it seems to take a lot of joy in that.
Yeah, exactly. And Alejandro at least is like mildly pointing things out that, that might help her remain safe, like get out your service weapon. If they get out of the car, get out of the car, you know? Yeah.
And she has drawn a gun on him. He has allowed her to live, which is, I think, a lot of compassion for...
That is true.
By Alejandro standards.
That is true. But yeah, that the conversation that they have, it's like, no, I'm getting the signature, and all these things. And just him eventually leaving, and her having a clear shot at him. And like through the movie, we've seen proof that she can hit that shot, you know? and I think it's just this really nice moment where, she kind of realizes like, he's definitely vile, but like, he might not, he's probably not the villain, you know, like he's not Kate's biggest problem, you know? Like,
yeah.
He like weirdly, he might be the good guy, you know? And, yeah. And I think that's this really nice quiet ending to the movie, that, I really enjoyed and I think it puts a nice button on the things about the drug war that the movie actually talks about, in that, like, it's, you know, it's like, you know, it's horrible, but it's so much more horrible, you know? And it's just like, this guy's a wolf, but, at least he's not a whole pack of wolves, you know?
Yeah. Just be happy this is all you know about such an awful thing.
Exactly.
And that when you get a chance to get out, you should.
Yeah. He's just a small piece of a giant world that you know nothing about.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that's kind of one of the first things we brought up about this movie is that it deals with something so big. It does it in such a way that we do care about the small people that it's in. The few, you know, number of people we get a grasp of in this movie, we do care about and we do know about. And I think our, well-defined or interestingly undefined characters, at least. Mm-hmm. But it all speaks to this kind of interesting take at this very small window of a very massive and dire situation.
I concur. So thank you for listening to the
guy. Single tear.
Yeah, exactly. No, it's just the light. It's just the light, I swear. Thank you for listening to the Guffman. Check out our website. Follow us on Twitter. Tell your friends. All right.
Seinfeld.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out themacguffinmen.com for supplementary links, articles, and more. Thanks for listening.